Chapter 23 Foxheads. Elaine turned the strange medallion around in her fingers, tracing the fox's head worked into the front. As with many Tarangreal, it was difficult to tell exactly what kind of metal had been used to create it originally. She suspected silver, with the senses of her talent. However, the medallion was no longer silver. It was something else. Something new. The songmistress of the Lucky Man's theater troupe continued her song. It was beautiful, pure, and high. Elaine sat on a cushioned chair on the right side of the hall, which had been repurposed with a raised area at the front for the players. A pair of Birgitta's guards stood behind her. The room was dim, lit only by a line of small flickering lamps set behind blue glass in alcoves on the walls. The blue light was overwhelmed by the burning yellow lanterns set around the front of the platform. Elaine was barely paying attention. She had often listened to the death of Princess Walishen as a ballad, and didn't really see the point of adding words to it and different players, instead of just having one bard do the entire thing. But it was Elorian's favorite ballad, and the favorable news out of Kyrian about these players, which nobles there had recently discovered, had many of the nobles in Andor buzzing. Hence this evening. Elorian had come at Elaine's invitation. Likely she was intrigued. Why had Elaine been so audacious as to invite her? Soon Elaine would take advantage of having Elorian here, but not quite yet. Let the woman enjoy the production first. She'd be expecting a political ambush. She'd wait for Elaine to walk over and sit in one of the seats near her, or perhaps send a servant with an offer. Elaine did neither, instead sitting and regarding the foxhead Tarangreal. It was a complex work of art, despite being only a single solid piece of metal. She could feel the weaves that had been used to create it. Its intricacy was far beyond the simplicity of the twisted dreaming rings. She was doing something wrong in trying to reproduce the medallion. She carried in her pouch one of her failed attempts. She'd had copies forged for her, as precise in detail as her silversmiths could create, though she suspected the form was not important. The amount of silver seemed to be, for some reason, but not the shape that silver took. She'd gotten close. The copy in her pouch didn't work perfectly. Less powerful weaves slid off anyone holding it, but very powerful ones could not be deflected for some reason. And, more problematic, it was impossible to channel while touching the copy. She could channel while holding the original. Indeed, she'd been giddy when she'd discovered that holding the medallion didn't interfere with her weaves at all. Being pregnant did. That was still a source of frustration to her, but it was possible to hold the fox head and channel, but not the copy. She hadn't gotten it quite right, and unfortunately her time was slim. Matt would need his medallion back soon. She took out the fake and set it on the seat beside her, then embraced the source and wove spirit. Several of the kin, a group of whom were watching the production some seats to the side, glanced up at her as she did so. Most were too distracted by the song. Elaine reached over and touched the medallion. Immediately her weaves unraveled and the source winked away from her, much as if a shield had been placed over her. She sighed as the song reached its heights. The copy was so close, yet so frustrating at the same time. She'd never wear something that prevented her from touching the source, not even for the protection it offered. Still, it was not completely useless. She could give a copy to Birgitta, perhaps, and a few of the guardsmen captains. It wouldn't do for her to create too many of these, not when they could be used so effectively against Aes Sedai. Could she perhaps give one of the copies to Matt? He'd never know, since he couldn't channel himself. No, she thought, squishing that temptation before it could fly too high. She had promised to return Matt's medallion, and she would. Not some copy that didn't work as well. She tucked both medallions into her dress pocket. Now that she knew she could get Matt to part with his medallion, perhaps she could bully him into giving her more time. Though the presence of the golem did worry her. How to deal with the thing? Perhaps copies of the medallion for all her guards wouldn't be a bad idea after all. The song finished, the final high-pitched note dwindling like a candle running out of wick. The end of the play came shortly afterward, men in white masks jumping out of the darkness. A brilliant light flashed, something thrown into one of the lanterns, and when it faded again, while Ishen lay dead on the stage, the bell of her red dress splayed around her like spilled blood. The audience stood to clap. Most of them were kin, though not a few were attendants of the other high seats who had been invited. All of those were supporters of hers. Dialin, of course, and young Conail Northan, and the equally young but twice as proud Catalin Haven. The final noble here was Sylvaise Cairn. What to make of her? Elaine shook her head, slipping the fake fox head into her pouch and lending a demure clap to the other accolades. The players would be focused only on her. If she didn't give some sign of approval, they'd fret the entire night. That done, Elaine made her way out to a nearby sitting room, which was furnished with padded, thick-armed chairs for relaxed conversation. There was a bar at the side, manned by a serving man in a crisp red and white uniform. He stood with hands behind his back, waiting respectfully as people trailed in. Elorian wasn't there, of course. It was basic courtesy for a guest to wait for the host to withdraw first. Though Elorian and Elaine weren't on the best of terms, it wouldn't do to show poor manners. Soon after Elaine arrived, Elorian trailed in. The plump woman was chatting with one of the kinswomen, pointedly ignoring the high seats who walked near her. Her conversation sounded forced. She probably could have been expected to avoid the sitting room entirely, but Elaine knew that the woman would want to make certain to express that she had not changed her mind about House Trakand. Elaine smiled but did not approach the woman, instead turning toward Sylvaise as she entered. Of medium build, the blue-eyed girl might have been pretty, save for that expressionless look on her face. Not emotionless, like an Aes Sedai, completely expressionless. It sometimes seemed like Sylvaise was a dressing dummy set up for display, but then on other occasions she'd show a hidden depth, a cunning deep down. "Thank you for the invitation, Your Majesty," Sylvaise said evenly, her voice a faintly eerie monotone. "It was most enlightening." "Enlightening," Elaine said. "I should hope that it was enjoyable." Sylvaise said nothing. She glanced at Elorian, and here she finally showed some emotion, an icy kind of dislike, the kind that gave you a shiver. "Why invite her, Your Majesty?" "House Cairn was at odds with Trakand once, too," Elaine said. "Often those whose loyalty is most difficult to win are the most valuable once it is yours." "She will not support you, Your Majesty," Sylvaise said, her voice still too calm. "Not after what your mother did." "When my mother took the throne years ago," Elaine said, glancing over at Elorian, "there were some houses it was said she'd never win over, and yet she did. So, you already have enough support, Your Majesty. You've had your victory. One of them." She left the rest unsaid. There was a debt of honor owed to House Tremaine. Courting Elorian's approval wasn't merely about strengthening the Lion Throne. It was about repairing rifts caused by Elaine's mother while under the influence of Gabriel. It was about recovering her house's reputation, about undoing the wrongs that could be undone. Sylvaise would not understand that. Elaine had learned about the poor girl's childhood. This one would not put much stock in the honor of a high seat. Sylvaise seemed to believe in only two things, power and vengeance. So long as she supported Elaine and could be guided, she would not be a liability. but she would never be the strength to House Trakand that someone like Dailin was. "How is my secretary serving your needs, Your Majesty?" Sylvaes asked. "Well enough, I suppose," Elaine said. So far he hadn't produced anything of value, though Elaine hadn't given him leave to do anything too drastic during his questioning. She was trapped in a conundrum. She'd been hunting this group of black Aja for what seemed like forever. She finally had them, but what did she do with them? Birgitta had taken the captives alive, ostensibly so that they could be questioned, then tried by the White Tower. But that meant they had no reason to speak. They knew their ultimate end would be execution. So Elaine either had to be willing to bargain with them, or she had to let the questioner take extreme measures. A queen had to be hard enough to allow these things, or that was what her teachers and tutors had explained. There was no question as to the guilt of these women, and they had already done enough to earn themselves death a dozen times over. Elaine wasn't certain how far she herself was willing to descend, however, to pry their secrets free. Besides, would that actually do any good? Ispan had had some kind of compulsion or oaths binding her. These were likely to have the same. Would they be able to reveal anything useful? If only there were a way to... She hesitated, missing Sylvaes's next comment as a thought occurred to her. Birgitta wouldn't like it, of course. Birgitta didn't like anything. But Elaine had felt Birgitta move off out of the palace somewhere, perhaps doing rounds of the guard posts outside. "Excuse me, Sylvaes," Elaine said. "I just recalled something that I absolutely must do." "Of course, Your Majesty," the girl said, in a flat, almost inhuman voice. Elaine moved from her, then quickly greeted and bade good evening to the others. Conail looked bored. He'd come because it had been expected of him. Dailin was her usual pleasant yet careful self. Elaine avoided Elorian. She greeted everyone else in the room of note. Once finished, she began to walk toward the exit. "Elaine Trakand," Elorian called out. Elaine paused, smiling to herself. She turned, wiping her face of anything other than calculated curiosity. "Yes, Lady Elorian?" "Have you invited me here only to ignore me?" the woman demanded from across the room. Other conversations grew quiet. "Not at all," Elaine said. "I was merely under the impression that you would have a more pleasant time if I did not force you to interact with me. This evening was not intended for political purposes." Elorian frowned. "Well, what was it for, then?" "To enjoy a good ballad, Lady Elorian," Elaine said. "And perhaps to remind you of days when you often enjoyed entertainment in the company of House Trakand." She smiled and nodded slightly, then left. "Let her think about that," Elaine thought with satisfaction. Elorian had no doubt heard that Gabriel had been one of the Forsaken. The woman might not believe it, but perhaps she would recall the years of respect she and Morghese had shown one another. Should a few short months be the cause to forget years of friendship? At the bottom of the steps out of the lounge, Elaine found Kyla Bent, one of Birgitta's guardswoman captains. The lanky, fire-haired woman was chatting amiably with a pair of guardsmen, both of whom seemed quite eager to gain her favor. All three snapped to attention when they noticed Elaine. "Where did Birgitta go?" Elaine asked.
"She went to investigate a disturbance at the gates, Your Majesty," Kyla said. "I've had word that it was nothing. That mercenary captain who came to visit you earlier tried to sneak onto the palace grounds. Captain Birgitta is questioning him."
Elaine raised an eyebrow. "You mean Matrim Coffin?" The woman nodded.
"She's questioning him?"
"That's what I heard, Your Majesty," Kyla replied.
"That means the two of them have gone out for drinks," Elaine said with a sigh. "Light, this was a bad time for it." or was it a good time? Birgitta couldn't object to Elaine's plan for the Black Aja if she was out with Matt. Elaine found herself smiling. Captain Bent, you are with me. She left the theater rooms and entered the palace proper. The woman followed, waving for the squad of guardswomen standing in the hallway to follow. Smiling to herself, Elaine began giving orders. One of the guardswomen ran off to deliver them, though she looked confused at the strange list of demands. Elaine made her way to her rooms, then sat down, thinking. She would have to move quickly. Birgitta was in a surly mood. Elaine could tell that through the bond. A servant soon arrived, carrying an enveloping black cloak. Elaine jumped up and slipped it on, then embraced the source. It took her 3 tries. Bloody ashes, but being pregnant was frustrating sometimes. She spun weaves of fire and air around her, using the mirror of mists to make herself look taller, more imposing. She fetched her jewelry chest and fished out a small ivory carving of a seated woman shrouded in her own hair. She used the Angreal to pull as much of the One power into her as she dared. To anyone watching who could channel, she'd look imposing indeed. She glanced back at the guardswomen. They were confused, obviously, and stood with their hands unconsciously on their swords. Your Majesty? Kyla asked. How do I look? Elaine said, tweaking her weaves to make her voice deeper. Kyla's eyes opened wider. Like a thunderhead given life, Your Majesty. Imposing, then? Elaine asked, jumping slightly at the dangerous, almost inhuman sound of her voice. Perfect. I'd say so, the lanky guardswoman said, rubbing her chin with one hand. Though the slippers do spoil the effect. Elaine glanced down, cursing at the pink silk. She wove some more, making her slippered feet vanish. The weave would make it appear as if she were floating in the air, wrapped in a pulsing shroud of darkness, cloak and straps of black cloth fluttering round her. Her face was hidden completely in blackness. As an added touch, she created 2 faintly glowing pricks of red where the eyes should be, like coals radiating with a deep crimson light. Light preserve us, one of the guards whispered. Elaine nodded to herself, her heart quickening in excitement. She wasn't worried. She'd be safe. Min's viewing promised that. She ran through her plans again. They were solid, but there would be only one way to test them for certain. Elaine inverted her weaves and tied them off. Then she turned to the guards. Turn out the lights, she said to them, and remain perfectly still. I will return shortly. But, Kyla said. That is an order, guardswoman, Elaine said firmly. You had best obey it. The woman hesitated. She likely knew that Birgitta would never let this happen. But Kyla was not Birgitta, thankfully. She reluctantly gave the order and the lights in the room were dampened. Elaine reached into her pocket and took out the fox head medallion, the real one, and held it hidden and tucked in her hand. She took a deep breath, then created a gateway. The ribbon of light was bright in the blackened room, glowing and bathing them in a pale glow, like moonlight. It opened into a room that was similarly dark. Elaine stepped through and found herself in the palace dungeons, in one of the cells. A woman knelt on the far side of the cell beside the sturdy door with a small window at the top slotted with bars that let in the only light in the dank cell. There was a small cot to Elaine's right and a bucket for a chamber pot to her left. The tiny room smelled of mold and human waste, and she could clearly hear the scratching of rats nearby. It still seemed too lavish quarters for the woman in front of her. Elaine had chosen Chesmal with calculation. The woman had seemed to have some authority among the black, and she was powerful enough that most of the others would bow to her. but she had also seemed more passionate than logical when Elaine had last encountered her. That would be important. The tall, handsome woman spun as soon as Elaine entered the cell. Elaine held her breath. Blessedly, the act worked. Chesmal threw herself to the straw-covered floor of the cell. "Great one," the woman hissed. "I had..."
"Silence!"
Elaine shouted, her voice booming. Chesmal cringed, then glanced to the side, as if waiting for the guards outside to peek in. There would be kinswomen there to hold Chesmal's shield. Elaine could feel them. Nobody came, despite the sound. The kin were following Elaine's orders, odd though those orders were.
"You are less than a rat,"
Elaine said with her disguised voice.
"You were sent to see to the great lord's glory. But what have you done? Allowed yourself to be captured by these fools, these children?"
Chesmal wailed, bowing herself further. "I am dust, great one. I am nothing. We have failed you. Please do not destroy me."
"And why shouldn't I?"
Elaine barked.
"The work of your particular group has been marked with failure after failure. What have you done that would possibly persuade me to allow you to live?"
"We have killed many of these fools who work against the great lord," Chesmal wailed. Elaine winced, then, steeling herself, created a whip of air and lashed it across the woman's back. It was no more than Chesmal deserved.
"You,"
Elaine said,
"you had nothing to do with their deaths. Do you think me stupid? Do you think me ignorant?"
"No, great one," Chesmal wailed, curling up further. "Please."
"Then give me reason to let you live."
"I have information, great one," Chesmal said quickly. "One of those we were told to seek, the two men that must be killed at all costs. One is here in Camelin."
"What's this?"
Elaine hesitated.
"Tell me more."
"He rides with a mercenary group," Chesmal said, sounding relieved to have information that was wanted. "He is the man with the keen eyes who wears the hat and carries the spear marked by ravens."
"Matt?"
The Dark Friends were hunting Matt? He was friends with Rand, true, and Taviren. But what had Matt done to gain the ire of the Forsaken themselves? More disturbing was that Chesmal knew of Matt's presence in the city. He hadn't arrived until after the Black Sisters had been captured. That meant Chesmal and the others were in contact with other Dark Friends. But who?
"And how did you discover this? Why was this not reported earlier?"
"I got news this very day, great one," Chesmal said, sounding more self-assured now. "We are planning an assassination."
"And how can you do that while imprisoned?"
Elaine demanded. Chesmal looked up briefly, her square face showing confusion. She said nothing. "I've tipped her off that I don't know as much as I should." Elaine gritted her teeth behind her mask of shadows. "Great one," Chesmal said. "I have been following my orders carefully. We are almost in a position to begin the invasion as commanded. Soon Andor will be awash with the blood of our enemies, and the great lord shall reign in fire and ash. We will see it done."
What was this? An invasion of Andor? Impossible. How would it happen? How could it happen? And yet, dared she ask the questions?
Chesmal seemed to suspect that something was wrong.
"You are not the chosen who visited me before, are you, great one?" Chesmal asked.
"Our ways are not to be questioned by one such as you,"
Elaine growled, punctuating the remark with another switch of air across the woman's back.
I need to know how much you have been told, so that I can judge the gaps in your understanding. If you are ignorant of, well, that is to be seen. First, explain to me how much you know of the invasion.
I know that the deadline nears, Great One, Chesmal said. If we had longer, perhaps we could plan more extensively. If you could see me freed from these confines, then I could... She trailed off, glancing to the side. Deadline. Elaine opened her mouth to demand more, but hesitated. What? She could no longer feel the kin outside. Had they retreated? And what of Chesmal's shield? The door rattled, the lock spun. Then the door flew open, revealing a group of people on the other side. And they were not the group of guards Elaine had been expecting. At their head was a man with short, dark black hair, thinning at the sides, and huge mustaches. He wore brown trousers and a black shirt, his coat long, almost an open-fronted robe. Sylvaise's secretary. Behind him were two women, Tamila and Eldrith, both of the Black Aja, both holding to the source. Light! Elaine stifled her surprise, meeting their gaze and not giving ground. If she could convince one black sister that she was of the Forsaken, then perhaps she could convince three. Tamila's eyes opened wide, and she threw herself to her knees, as did the secretary. Eldrith, however, hesitated. Elaine couldn't be certain if it was her stance, her disguise, or her reaction to seeing the three newcomers. Perhaps it was something else entirely. Either way, Eldrith wasn't taken in. The round-faced woman began to channel. Elaine cursed to herself, forming weaves of her own. She slammed a shield at Eldrith right as she felt one come for her. Fortunately, she was holding Matt's Turangreal. The weave unraveled, and the medallion grew cold in Elaine's hand. Elaine's own weave slid evenly between Eldrith and the source, cutting her off. The glow of the power winked out around her.
What are you doing, you idiot? Chesmal screeched. You try to overthrow one of the Chosen? You'll see us all dead.
That's not one of the Chosen, Eldrith yelled back. Elaine belatedly thought to weave a gag of air. You've been duped. Elaine got the gag in her mouth, but it was too late.
Tamila, who had always looked too delicate to be a black sister, embraced the source and looked up. Chesmal's expression turned from horror to anger. Elaine quickly tied off Eldrith's shield and began weaving another one. A weave of air hit her. The fox-head medallion grew cold, and, blessing Matt for his timely loan, Elaine placed a shield between Chesmal and the source. Tamila gaped at Elaine, obviously stunned to see her weaves fail. Sylvaise's secretary wasn't so slow, however. He threw himself forward unexpectedly, ramming Elaine back against the wall with a great deal of force. Pain laced out from her shoulder and she felt something crack. Her shoulder bone? The babes, she thought immediately. It was a primal flash of horror and instant terror that defied all thoughts about men and viewings. In her surprise, she let go of the gateway leading back to her room above. It winked out.
She has a Turangreal of some kind, Tamila cried. Weaves fall off of her.
Elaine scrambled, pushing against the secretary and beginning a weave of air to thrust him back. As she did, however, he clawed at her hand, perhaps having noticed a flash of silvery metal there. The secretary got his long fingers around the medallion just as Elaine's burst of air hit him. The secretary flew backward, clinging to the medallion. Elaine growled, still furious. Tamila grinned maliciously, and weaves of air sprang up around her. She threw them forward, but Elaine met them with her own. The two weaves of air slammed against one another, causing the air to churn in the small room. Bits of straw blew up in a flurry. Elaine's ears protested the sudden pressure. The dark-haired secretary scrambled back from the battle, clutching the Turangreal. Elaine reached a weave toward him, but it unraveled. Elaine yelled in anger, pain throbbing in her shoulder where she'd hit the wall. The small room was cramped with so many people in it, and Tamila stood in the doorway, unintentionally blocking the secretary from getting away. Or maybe it was intentional. She probably wanted that medallion. The other two black sisters hunkered down, air blasting around them, still shielded. Elaine drew as much through the Ungreal as she dared, forcing her weave of air forward, shoving aside the one Tamila was using to push. The two held for a moment, then Elaine's burst through, crashing into Tamila and tossing her out of the cell and against the stone wall outside. Elaine followed with a shield, though it appeared that Tamila had been knocked unconscious from the blast. The secretary bolted for the nearby doorway. Elaine felt a stab of panic. She did the only thing she could think of. She picked up Chesmal in a weave of air and threw her at the secretary. Both went down in a heap. A metallic ping sounded in the air as the foxhead medallion slipped free and hit the ground, rolling through the door. Elaine took a deep breath, pain flaring across her chest, her arm falling slack. She could no longer hold it up properly. She cradled it in her other arm, angry, clinging to the source. The sweetness of Sidar was a comfort. She wove air and tied up Chesmal, the secretary, and Eldrith, who had been trying to crawl toward Elaine unobtrusively. Calming herself, Elaine pushed past them out of the small cell to check on Tamila in the hallway outside. The woman was still breathing, but was indeed unconscious. Elaine tied her in air, too, to be certain, then carefully picked up the foxhead medallion. She winced at the pain of her other arm. Yes, she'd broken a bone for certain. The dark hallway was empty, set with four doorways for cells, lit by only a single stand lamp. Where were the guards and kin? She reluctantly released the weaves that formed her disguise. She wouldn't want any soldiers arriving and mistaking her for one of the Dark Friends. Certainly someone had heard some of that racket. In the back of her mind, she could sense concern from Birgitta, who was getting closer. The warder had undoubtedly felt Elaine's injury. Almost, Elaine preferred the pain of her shoulder to the talking to she'd get from Birgitta. She winced again, considering that, as she turned and inspected her captives. She'd need to check the other cells. Of course her babes would be all right. She would be all right. She'd overreacted to the pain. She hadn't really been afraid. Still, best to...
Hello, my queen,
a man's voice whispered in her ear, right before a second pain blossomed in her side. She gasped, stumbling forward. A hand reached out and yanked the medallion from her fingers. Elaine spun, and the room seemed blurry. Something warm ran down her side. She was bleeding. She was so stunned she felt the source slip away from her. Doylen Melar stood behind her in the hallway, holding a bloodied knife in his right hand, hefting the medallion in his left. His hatchet-like face was broken by a deep smile, almost a leer. Though he wore only rags, he looked as self-assured as a king on his throne. Elaine hissed and reached for the source, but nothing happened. She heard chuckling behind her. She hadn't tied off Chesmal's shield. As soon as Elaine released the source, the weaves would have vanished. Sure enough, Elaine glanced and found weaves cutting her off from the source. Chesmal, handsome face flushed, smiled at her. Light! There was blood pooling at Elaine's feet. So much of it. She stumbled back against the wall of the hallway, Melar to one side, Chesmal the other. She couldn't die. Min had said,
"We could be misinterpreting."
Birgitta's voice returned to her.
"Any number of things could still go wrong." "Heal her,"
Melar said.
"What?"
Chesmal demanded. Behind her, Eldrith was dusting herself off inside the cell doorway. She'd fallen to the ground when Elaine's weavings of air dissipated, but her shield was still in place. That one Elaine had tied in place. Think, Elaine told herself, blood dribbling between her fingers. There has to be a way out. There has to be. Oh, light, Birgitta, hurry.
Heal her, Melar said again. The knife wound was to make her drop you.
Fool, Chesmal said. If the weaves had been tied off, a wound wouldn't have released us.
Then she would have died, Melar said, shrugging.
He eyed Elaine. Those handsome eyes of his shone with lust.
And that would have been a pity, for she was promised to me, Aes Sedai. I won't have her die here in this dungeon. She doesn't die until I have had time to enjoy her.
He looked at the Black Sister.
Besides, you think those whom we serve would be pleased if they knew you'd let the Queen of Andor die without yielding her secrets?
Chesmal looked dissatisfied, but she apparently saw the wisdom in his words. Behind them, the secretary slipped out of the cell, and after glancing both ways, slunk down the hallway toward the steps and hurried up them. Chesmal crossed the hallway toward Elaine. Blessedly, Elaine was getting fuzzy-headed. She rested her back against the wall, barely feeling the pain of her broken shoulder, and slid down until she was sitting.
Idiot girl, Chesmal said. I saw through your ploy, of course. I was leading you on, knowing that help was coming.
The words were hollow. She was lying for the benefit of the others.
The healing. Elaine needed that healing.
Her mind was growing dull, her vision darkening. She held her hand to her side, terrified for herself, for her children. Her hand slipped. She felt something through the fabric in the pocket of her dress. The Foxhead medallion copy. Chesmal put her hands on Elaine's head, crafting healing weaves. Elaine's veins became ice water, her body overwhelmed by a wave of power. She drew in a deep breath, the agony in her side and shoulder vanishing.
There, Chesmal said. Now quickly, we need to...
Elaine whipped free the other medallion and held it up. By reflex, Chesmal grabbed it. That made the woman unable to channel. Her weaves vanished, including Elaine's shield. Chesmal cursed, dropping the medallion. It hit and rolled as Chesmal wove a shield. Elaine didn't bother with a shield. This time she wove fire. Simple, direct, dangerous. The Dark Sister's clothing burst into flame before she could finish weaving, and she cried out. Elaine hauled herself to her feet. The hallway shook and spun. The healing had taken a lot out of her. But before things stopped spinning, she wove another thread of fire, lashing it at Melar. He had risked the life of her children. He had stabbed her. The weaves unraveled the moment they touched him. He smiled up at her, stopping something with his foot. The second medallion.
Here now, he said, scooping it up. Another one? If I shake you, will a third fall free?
Elaine hissed. Chesmal was still screaming, a fire. She fell to the ground, kicking, the room growing pungent with the scent of burned flesh. Light! Elaine hadn't meant to kill her, but there wasn't time to spare. She wove air, snatching up Eldrith again before the woman could escape. Elaine pushed her forward, between herself and Melar, just in case. He watched with keen eyes, edging forward, holding the two medallions in one hand and his dagger in the other. It still glistened with Elaine's blood.
We aren't finished, my queen,
he said in a soft voice.
These others were promised power. But my reward was always to be you. I always collect what I am owed.
He watched Elaine with care, expecting some trick. If only she had one. She could barely stand upright. Holding the source was difficult. She backed away, keeping Eldrith between herself and Melar. His eyes flicked to the statuesque woman. She stood with arms tied to her sides by air, floating an inch above the ground. With a jerking motion, he jumped forward and slit Eldrith's throat. Elaine started, scrambling backward.
"Sorry,"
Melar said, and it took Elaine a moment to realize he was addressing Eldrith.
"But orders are orders."
With that, he ducked, plunging his dagger into Tamila's unconscious body. He couldn't escape with the medallions. With a surge of strength, Elaine drew in the one power and wove earth. She pulled at the ceiling above Melar as he stood up. Stones shattered, blocks falling downward, causing him to yell and cover his head as he ducked away. Something rang in the air. Metal on stone. The hallway shook, and dust sprayed in the air. The rain of rocks drove Melar away, but kept her from chasing. He vanished up the stairwell to the right. Elaine sank down to her knees, feeling drained. But then she saw something glittering among the rubble of the ceiling blocks she'd pulled down. A bit of silvery metal. One of the medallions. Holding her breath, she grabbed it. Blessedly, the source didn't leave her. Melar had escaped with the copy, it seemed, but she still had the original. She sighed, allowing herself to sit back against the cold stone wall of the room. She wanted to lapse into unconsciousness, but forced herself to tuck away the medallion, then remain awake until Birgitta appeared in the hallway. The warder panted heavily from having run, her red coat and golden braid wet with rainwater. Matt stepped down into the hallway after her, wearing a scarf up around his face, his brown hair plastered to his head with water. His eyes darted from side to side, a quarterstaff held at guard. Birgitta knelt by Elaine's side. "Are you all right?" she asked urgently. Elaine nodded in exhaustion. "I got myself out of this one." "In a way." "Did you happen to do the world a favor and kill Melar on your way in?"
"Melar?" Birgitta asked, alarmed. "No, Elaine, there's blood on your dress."
"I'm fine," she said. "Really, I've been healed."
So Melar was free.
"Quickly," she said. "Search the hallways. The guards and the kin who were guarding this place."
"We found them," Birgitta said, "stuffed into the bottom of the stairwell, dead." "Elaine, what happened?"
To the side, Matt poked at Tamila's corpse, noting the dagger wound in her chest. Elaine pressed her hands to her abdomen. "Her babes would be all right, wouldn't they?"
"I did something very rash, Birgitta, and I know that you are going to scream at me for it. But would you first please take me to my rooms? I think we should have Melfane look at me, just in case."
An hour after the failed assassination attempt on Egwene, Gawain stood alone in a small room that was part of the Ammerlin's chambers. He'd been released from the weaves that had held him, then told to stay put. Egwene finally strode into the room.
"Sit,"
she said. He hesitated, but her fierce eyes could have set candles aflame. He sat down on the stool. This small room held several dressers and trunks for clothing. The doorway led out to the larger sitting room, where he'd been captured in weaves. A doorway off of that room led to Egwene's bedchamber. Egwene shut the door, sequestering the two of them from the many guards, warders, and Aes Sedai milling about in the rooms outside. Their conversations made a low hum through the door. Egwene still wore red and gold, and she had golden threads woven into her dark hair. Her cheeks were flushed with anger at him. That made her even more beautiful than usual.
"Egwene, do you realize what you have done? I checked to see if the woman I love was safe, following the discovery of an assassin outside her door."
She folded her arms beneath her breasts. He could almost feel the heat of her anger.
"Your yelling has drawn half of the White Tower down upon us. They saw you captured. The assassin knows now about my weaves." Lie to Gwen. You talk as if I did it on purpose. I was only trying to protect you. I didn't ask for your protection. I asked for your obedience. Gawain, don't you see the opportunity we've missed? If you hadn't scared Messana away, she'd have walked into my traps. It wasn't one of the Forsaken, Gawain said. It was a man. You said you couldn't see the face or make out the figure because it was blurred. Well, yes, Gawain said. But he fought with the sword. And a woman couldn't use a sword? The size of the person you saw indicated a woman. Maybe, but one of the Forsaken? Lie to Gwen. If it had been Messana, then she'd have used the power to burn me to dust. Another reason, Egwene said, that you should not have disobeyed me. Perhaps you're right. Perhaps this was one of Messana's minions, a dark friend or gray man. If that were the case, I'd have them captive and be able to learn about Messana's plots. And Gawain, what if you had found Messana? What could you have done? He looked down at the floor. I told you that I had taken precautions, she continued. And still you disobeyed. And now because of what you've done, the murderer knows that I was anticipating her. She'll be more careful next time. How many lives do you think you just cost us? Gawain kept his hands in his lap, trying to hide the fists that they had formed. He should have felt ashamed, but all he could feel was anger, a rage he couldn't explain. Frustration at himself, but mostly at Egwene for turning an honest mistake into a personal affront. It seems to me, he said, that you don't want a warder at all. Because I'll tell you, Egwene, if you can't stand being looked after, then no man will do. Perhaps you're right, she said curtly. Her skirts rustled as she pulled open the door to the hall, went out, and then pulled it closed behind her. Not quite a slam. Gawain stood up and wanted to kick the door. Light, what a mess this had become. He could hear Egwene through the door, sending the gawkers back to their beds, ordering the tower guard to be extra vigilant tonight. That was likely for show. She knew that the assassin wouldn't try again so soon. Gawain slipped out of the room and left. She noted his departure, but said nothing to him, instead turning to speak softly with Sylviana. The red had a glare for Gawain that would have made a boulder wince. Gawain passed several guards who, for their parts, seemed respectful of Gawain. As far as they knew, he'd foiled an attempt on the Ammerlin's life. Gawain nodded to their salutes. Chewbane stood nearby, inspecting the knife that had nearly taken Gawain in the chest. Chewbane held up the knife to him. Have you ever seen anything like this? Gawain took the narrow, sleek knife. It was balanced for throwing, with a fine steel blade that looked something like an elongated candle's flame. Set into the center were three bits of blood-colored rock. What kind of stone is that? Gawain asked, holding the knife up to the light.
I've never seen it before.
Gawain turned the knife over a few times. There weren't any inscriptions or carvings.
This came within half a breath of claiming my life. You can take it, if you wish,
Chewbane said.
Maybe you can ask Bryn's men if they've ever seen one like it. We have a second one we found down the hallway. It was also intended for my heart,
Gawain said, tucking the knife into his belt.
Thank you. I have a gift for you in return.
Chewbane raised an eyebrow.
You've been complaining of the men you lost, Gawain said. Well, I've a group of soldiers I can recommend strongly. From Bryn's army?
Chewbane asked, lips downturned. Like many of the Tower Guard, he still regarded Bryn's army as a rival force.
No, Gawain said. Men loyal to the Tower. Some of those who trained to be warders and who fought with me on Elida's side. They're feeling displaced now, and they would rather be soldiers than warders. I'd appreciate it if you'd give them a home. They're solid men and excellent warriors.
Chewbane nodded.
Send them to me. They'll come to you tomorrow, Gawain said. I only ask one thing. Try not to break the group apart. They've been through much together. Their bond gives them strength. Shouldn't be difficult, Chewbane said. The 10th Tower Company was destroyed nearly to a man by those flaming Shonchan. I'll set some veteran officers over your lads and form the new company out of them.
Thank you, Gowan said. He nodded toward Egwene's quarters. Watch over her for me, Chubane. I think she's determined to see herself dead.
It is ever my duty to defend and uphold the Amalyn. But where will you be?
She made it clear that she wants no water, Gowan said, his mind drifting back to the things Bryn had said to him earlier. What did he want, aside from Egwene? Perhaps it was time to find out.
I think it's past time I went to visit my sister.
Chubane nodded, and Gowan took his leave. He visited the barracks and gathered his possessions, little more than a change of clothing and a winter cloak, then made his way to the stables and saddled Challenge. Then he led the horse to the traveling ground. Egwene maintained a sister on duty there at all times. Tonight's Aes Sedai, a petite, drowsy-eyed green named Nimri, didn't question him. She made him a gateway to a hillside about an hour's travel from Camelin. And so he left Tarvalen, and Egwene Alvir behind.
What is that?
Lan demanded. The aged Nazar looked up from his saddlebags, leather hadori holding down his powdery white hair. A small stream gurgled near their camp in the middle of a forest of highland pines. Those pines shouldn't have borne half so many brown needles. Nazar had been tucking something into his saddlebags, and Lan had happened to spot a bit of gold peeking out.
This?
Nazar asked. He pulled the cloth out. A brilliant white flag with a golden crane embroidered into the center. It was fine work with beautiful stitching. Lan nearly grabbed it out of Nazar's fingers and ripped it in half.
Now I see that expression on your face, Lan Mandragoran, Nazar said. Well, don't you be getting all self-centered about this. A man has a right to carry his kingdom's flag with him. You're a baker, Nazar. I'm a borderlander first, son,
the man said, tucking the banner away.
This is my heritage.
Bah, Lan said, turning away. The others were breaking up camp. He'd grudgingly allowed the three newcomers to join him. They were stubborn as boars, and in the end he had had to succumb to his oath. He'd promised that he'd accept followers. These men technically hadn't asked to ride with him. They'd simply started doing it. That was enough. Besides, if they were going to travel in the same direction, then there was little sense in making two camps. Lan continued to wipe his face dry from the morning's washing. Bulin was getting bread ready for breakfast. This grove of pines was in eastern Kandor. They were getting close to the border with Arafel. Perhaps he could... He froze. There were several new tents in their camp. A group of 8 men were chatting with Andir. 3 of them looked plump around the waist. Not warriors, judging by their soft clothing, though they did appear to be Malkieri. The other 5 were all Shinarans, topknots on their heads, leather bracers on their arms, and horse bows set into cases beside long two-handed swords on their backs.
What is this?
Lan demanded.
Wylan, Manigan, and Goranellan, Andir said, gesturing to the Malkieri. These others are Kai, Jao, Merikel, Eonor, Kuhn.
I didn't ask who, Lan said, voice cold. I asked what. What have you done?
Andir shrugged.
We met them before running into you. We told them to wait along the southern roadway for us. Rakim fetched them last night while you were sleeping.
Rakim was supposed to be on watch, Lan said.
I watched in his stead, Andir said. I figured we'd want these fellows.
All 3 of the plump merchants looked to Lan, then went down on their knees. One was weeping openly.
Tyshar Malkir.
The 5 Shannarans saluted Lan.
Dashan,
one said.
We have brought what we could to the cause of the Golden Crane, another of the merchants added. All that we could sell and gather in a little time.
It is not much, said the 3rd.
but we lend you our swords as well. We may look to have grown soft, but we can fight. We will fight.
I don't need what you brought, Lan said, exasperated.
Before you say too much more, old friend, Andir said, laying a hand on Lan's shoulder, perhaps you should have a look at that. He nodded to the side.
Lan frowned, hearing a rattling sound. He stepped past a patch of trees to look upon the path to the camp. 2 dozen wagons were approaching, each piled high with supplies, weapons, sacks of grain, tents. Lan opened his eyes wide. A good dozen war horses were hitched in a line, and strong oxen pulled the wagons. Teamsters and servants walked alongside them.
When they said they sold what they could and brought supplies, Andir said, they meant it.
We will never be able to move quietly with all of this, Lan said.
Andir shrugged. Lan took a deep breath.
Very well.
He would work with it.
Moving quietly appears to be failing anyway. From now on, we will pose as a caravan delivering supplies to Shinar. But you will swear to me, he said, turning toward the men. Each of you will swear not to reveal who I am, or send word to anyone else who might be looking for me. You will swear it.
Nazar looked like he would object, but Lan silenced him with a stern look. One by one, they swore. The 5 had become dozens. But it would stop there.